rendering of service. Upadikshanti. They will initiate. Te. You. Jnanam. Into knowledge. Jnaninaha. The self-realized. Tattva. Of the truth. Darashinaha. Seers. Ich habe noch vergessen, diejenigen von euch, die nicht Englisch sprechen, Padmanabha gibt dort hinten die Übersetzung. Translation. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as it is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharman tu sakshat Bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender. And one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absorbed inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind towards the disciple. Therefore, if the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Namaom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya Adeshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Jaya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Sasha, may I just ask, what Wouldn't it be more clever to make the translation back in the room so that you can speak louder? So, let us once again hear the shloka. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya uparikshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarashina. Translation. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So Hare Krishna, first of all, I want to say very, very, very much welcome for this celebration which you all have come to attend, the Radhashtami ceremony, tomorrow, throughout the whole day. It's amazing to see that when we celebrate Jamashtami, not amazing, but it is notable to see when we celebrate Jamashtami, so many more people were there because everyone knows about Krishna's appearance day, but not so many know about Radha Rani's appearance day. Although for us as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radha Rani is even, or to get the mercy of Radha Rani is more important than to get the mercy of Krishna. So it is only by great fortune that today we can assemble here on this holy Chaitra, and then tomorrow make a concentrated effort to be the mercy hunters. So it is certainly a great occasion for celebration that you all have managed to come here and celebrate. You know, this verse this evening is of course known to all of us who are situating here, because as mentioned, a number of Vaishnavas have come who are these mercy hunters, who are so to say a little bit more informed about Krishna consciousness. So I really want to just briefly touch the points and then go into some other subjects. We need guidance when we go into spiritual life. The reason is that we cannot understand subjects which are transcendental with the help of our senses and with the help of our mind. The limitations of the senses are easily known in this world. We can't look beyond the walls of the temple, and even if we bring microscopes and other instruments, we look with limited eyes through them. However, the limitations of the mind are not so easily accepted, even if they are known. Both senses and mind are not instruments to get help us to get access to the transcendence. And the mind is therefore, the reason why the mind is unreliable as an instrument is because by nature he is flickering. That means it is not possible for the mind for a longer amount of time to stay with the subject, nor is it possible for the mind, nor does the mind follow our control. And just to get your attention to the subject, I want to make a little experiment which I've done with many crowds in the public lectures. I want to give you a little think duty. I will make a sign with my karatas, and after I will say something which you have to do, then the sign comes, then you're free. to think what you want. Don't think of this orange medanga now. Thank you. What have you thought about? I mean, so obviously it's even foolish to ask the question, of course, of the orange medanga we have all spent our time thinking of. Mind is not under our control. We can tell it something, but it won't follow. Krishna says, Chanchalai Mana Krishna, that mind is so flickering and it works under the control of material nature. So just like the material senses are not able to give us access to the transcendence, our chanchala mind, our flickering mind, is in the similar way disqualified. We can't direct it. It hops from subject to subject to subject. The mind is such a trickster, it can put into question even things which you think are right. For instance, it can happen that you have, by your intelligence, accepted Krishna consciousness as a path, and you have seen initiation into spiritual life as a necessary gate for you, but the mind will put that into question. Even at the day of initiation, it can do so. Chanchala, it is so flickering that it can put into question even if there is a soul. Are we really Amrita Putra, a child of eternity? Are we really the eternal soul? The mind can ask such a question even after having been solidly convinced. So, especially in the conditioned state of the living entity, the mind, by its own inherent dynamic nature, it will remember things of the material realm, and it won't be a reliable guide into the spiritual reality. Even when we practice Krishna consciousness, say during japa time, our mind wanders all of a sudden into a subject which is totally foreign to the chanting of the holy name. And there is no means to really know how this happens. All of a sudden we wake up in a thought, in a train of thought even, which leads us light years away from Krishna. So it is described that this is not always the case. If the mind has been properly purified by accepting the discipline of following the guidance from a spiritual master, it automatically will go towards the transcendental subject matter. Just like in conditioned life, the mind, we may say so, roams and wanders to the worldly subject, and the mind is purified, it will go automatically to Krishna. In fact, everything which a person sees on such a level reminds him of Krishna. There is a very interesting little proverb, but I can't say it in the concise way. I have to say it almost in the story fashion. Once there was a devotee who saw vultures circling in the sky. So when he saw it, he was very enthusiastic and danced. And some people came and asked him, "Why are you happy?" well, don't you see the vultures circling in the sky? Asked the devotee. Yes, said the people. That's not a cause for celebration. It means there's death. They circle around. This means there is a dead body and they will eat it. It's not a sign for celebration. No, no, said the devotee. By seeing the circles of the vultures, I know that a cow has died. That's the people. That's even more a cause to be said. Cow is very special. Gomata, a mother. What is in your mind? No, no, said the devotees. You don't understand. Everyone has to die. Cow has died, and now there's death. We can make from the skin a medanda, from the leather of the cow which has found a natural death, we can make a madanga. And then we can make kirtan and chant Hare Krishna. That's a cause of celebration. So just consider this example. He didn't see death or vultures, he saw the kirtan. So this is coming automatically, just like in the conditioned state, the mind automatically goes to Maya. Here in this state, it goes to Krishna. So this is something which we wanted to... the point here is that at this present moment, the mind is not doing that. It always goes to Maya. And therefore we do need guidance. Otherwise, it is not possible. Thank you. Just wanted to explain this point. Even logic or logical considerations cannot help us come to the transcendental. Our mind just roams in wonder. Yes, here is the point. Maharishi Rishabhdev explains that even a devotee has to be very careful in all this controlling the mind. He gives the example of a hunter who has just managed to capture a wild animal. So when he has put it in the cage, he does not think, now the work is done. No, he very carefully locks the door of the cage. If it is not done, then the wild animal will run out of the cage into the jungle again. So in the same way, even if we have managed to come to the transcendental process of Krishna consciousness, we must be very, very intense on controlling the mind wherever it wanders due to its restless nature. Because even if we have given it the cage of the rules and regulations, even if we have put it into a daily life of the practice of a Vaishnava, even if we follow the Vaishnava etiquette, the mind can just run into the jungle of material existence. Therefore, devotee, all this is careful to watch the wanderings of the mind. Now, don't despair. Even in the mind of a saint, thoughts of sense gratification and thoughts of Maya can come. However, he knows of a wonderful process which helps him not to degrade himself. And this is an important point to register, because it is practical also to us. There are three mental processes. Thinking matures into feeling, and feeling matures into willing. If I think an indiscreet thought, and I dwell on it, means remain with it, I will get a certain type of emotional infection. The thought will be with me for a long time and I will feel for it. You all might remember this from your melodic days in the material world, when you heard a song and that song was always coming into the mind, and even at times when it was not very suitable. You were thinking, I want to hold your hand, yeah, and then some other indiscretions, if you want to give it that name. Or when you, let us say, you think of a particular member of the opposite gender, and you always think of him or her, and it just sticks to the mind, like chewing gum, and you can't just get it out. This is what happens when you let thinking mature into feeling, into like an emotional hang-up. And the natural state after feeling is that you want to do it, willing. This is a natural progression. It's just as natural as you putting food into the mouth and then facing the aggressive smelling result of that. It's a natural progress of digestion which takes on. So if you dwell on something which is not favorable for your spiritual life, then it will go through the process, thinking, feeling, and then willing. And once you desire it very strongly, it's very difficult to rid yourself of it. Now, we all have heard that in Kali Yuga, we don't have to face the reactions of thoughts. That was in other yugas, where you thought something, and as a result of the thinking process, you were getting karmic reactions for that. However, this does not mean that thoughts of material life are harmless. No, they are not harmless because of that progression. Thinking, feeling, and then desiring or strongly willing it. And so the devotee or a saint who is a little bit in knowledge about this will immediately, when the thought comes, he will be aware or wakeful, and as a result of this he will be able to cure the thought when it is not favorable. He will break the pattern of the thought, so to say. He will notice it's here and he will get it out of his system. There are many things you can do to get materialistic thoughts which is disturbing to your spiritual progress out of the system. The very easy process is to just throw yourself into the holy, into the kirtan, and just dance and chant. We have a slideshow about one of the Gauranga Bhajan group concerts in a country which is in war, and there's one soldier who was dragged by the mercy of the Vaishnavas onto the stage and induced to chant. And you can see we have two pictures like this. He looks totally emptied out of his soldier thoughts. He just looks a certain pattern of thought is broken, aggression in this case. So the chanting of the holy name has such a force that it, when we just helplessly throw ourselves in the kirtan, it can really take out thoughts. But also other things are which are very effective is we can meditate about something which, I mean, this is very unusual to do in material life, but in spiritual life you always do it. You meditate about the disadvantage of following that thought. To give you a little example from the summertime, as young people, we are prone to think of the opposite sex, but let us go a little bit into the history of Romeo and Julia. Most of you may not be familiar. It's the ideal pair, the ideal couple. Both come from an aristocratic background, as far as I'm informed, but the parents or families of them did not like each other and therefore were deadly against the marriage. So therefore Romeo and Julia saw no other possibility to be united than to commit suicide and then be together in death. This is how the story goes. It doesn't work, but this is how the story goes. So the world, it was very romantic, this a lot of emotional electricity was going back and forth, and at the high point, before the frustration, they just kept the suspense by the suicide. That's the literary idea of it. But imagine they would not have killed themselves, and we would visit them after 30 years. What would we see? Julia would most probably have found out that Romeo was not so loyal. He couldn't control his senses and had three other acquaintances of Italian girls during the marriage, and the rubes, the bodily forms, are disintegrating fast. Both of them have developed an amazing belly, and we don't want to go so much into detail. They have most probably 6 children. That's natural at those times. And they don't follow the parents at all, but scream all day. They are Vana Shankar. I mean, not really wanted, and they had so much of a disturbance. And Romeo found out that Julia is so selfish because of her aristocratic background. She always wants the best for herself only. She's not a lovable spouse at all, but highly intrigued by her own advantage in everything. So, but the most disturbing thing is that one night Romeo found out that Julia was snoring. Started to snore, and there was no peace any longer in the common sleeping room. In fact, there was only distress, and in the morning Romeo was totally he had almost a nervous breakdown. Oh, Hare Krishna. Now we have to start talking again transcendentally. So anyways, think about the disadvantage of something. This is not a polemic on Shakespeare, but it is a realistic assertion of the illusions of mundane relationships. So a devotee can, by doing this simple meditation, can avoid becoming so much illusioned and so much fascinated by material desires that he can stop at the thinking stage, so that he doesn't feel and will it. That's a very interesting point. Now, another interesting point, and with this one I want to finish this, end this little lecture. I want to say one thing which is very important for a devotee to follow in his or her spiritual development. We said we need guidance for our mind, and we described a little bit how our mind is over the feelings of our fellow Vaishnavas, because we think only of I and mine. This can be a very great problem, because as long as you are involved in this desire for pratishtha or recognition, it's not possible to actually have a Krishna conscious realization, because the Lord does not reside in a heart which is full of vain glorification, self-glorification. This narcissistic tendency is not good. Krishna consciousness can only be practiced by those who are no longer interested in the vain glory of material life. In fact, the Krishna consciousness means to glorify someone else, Krishna, and to glorify also the Vaishnavas around him. So I want to just make this point clear by telling you a little leela which stroked me personally very much, and I have learned so much from it that I want to share it with all of you. It really can change one's life if one thinks about it. As you all know, in an advanced state of Krishna consciousness, it is possible for the devotee to actually be connected closely with Sri Krishna. Once Srila Rupa Goswami was sitting in Teh Kadamba and meditating about Sri Sri Radha Krishna, and he had a revelation at that time. The revelation was like this. Srimati Radharani saw a particularly relishable fruit on a tree, and her gopi assistants made something like a human mountain, or a human ladder, you could say, so that Srimati Radharani could climb up in order to pick the fruit. Unseen by her and all the gopis, Sri Krishna was in the same tree. And he had bent the branch down so that the fruit appeared to be in the reach of Srimati Radharani. Now just as she was picking the fruit, touching the fruit, Krishna went like... And as a result, I mean, he released the branch. As a result, the branch snipped up. And since the fruit was so tightly connected with the branch, Srimati Radharani was hanging in the tree in suspense. And she was very, very afraid. The Divine Lord, the master of all playful leelas, was then coming to Srimati Radharani and saving her from this awkward and also somewhat dangerous position, and took her up to the tree. So when Srila Rupa Goswami saw this leela, he was laughing because it definitely had a humorous note to it. At that moment, when he was laughing, another Vaishnava passed by who had a somewhat crippled body. He couldn't go very erect, but someone was bent over. And the Vaishnava thought Srila Rupa Goswami is laughing about his unusual movements of the body. And he thought, what is this? How can he laugh? He should see with how we say, yeah, I thought this shared with equal vision. He should not make differences between the well-grown up bodies, you know, muscular bodies. And he felt hurt. So when the Vaishnava had passed, Srila Rupa Goswami's revelation broke. And he tried to get back into the Leela, but he couldn't. And felt very, very sad. And he went to Sanatana Goswami and described, I had such a nice revelation, and then all of a sudden Radha and Krishna disappeared and left me in the desert of my separation. What could be the cause? Sanatana Goswami looked at him and he said, I think you have committed a Vaishnava aparad. But said Rupa Goswami, not that I know. This is very far away from my heart. No, said Sanatana Goswami, you must have done it unintentionally. Rupa Goswami really tried to think, you know, he believed his brother, who was acting like his guru, but he honestly couldn't find anything in his life which was even remotely resembling an offense against a Vaishnava. So Sanatana Goswami said, well, why don't you do one thing? You just invite all of the Vaishnavas to a great festivity, and if there's one Vaishnava who doesn't come, then this might be the Vaishnava whom you have unintentionally hurt. So this was done, and when Rupa Goswami looked through all the devotees, he saw that this one Vaishnava with a somewhat bent over body was not there, so he immediately went to him and asked, did I do anything against you? And the Vaishnava said immediately, no problem. I only have a question. You are so learned. Doesn't one look on an advanced state of Sisi Radha Madan ki? On an advanced state of Krishna consciousness, doesn't one look with an equal vision towards all? Does one distinguish? And immediately Rupa Goswami could understand. No, he said, you have misunderstood me. I was not laughing about your movements. I was just laughing about something totally different. I just was in my meditation and I saw something very humorously. And that's why I laughed at it. Krishna is the greatest humorous personality. That is what I laughed about. I don't think he disclosed what he exactly saw. So this story is a very interesting reminder to all of us that, see, here a self-realized soul did hurt some devotee and therefore couldn't pursue his highest meditation on Radha and Krishna. In much the same way, we unintentionally, maybe due to our sometimes stormy natures and busy plans and high-reaching goals, might, so to say, storm over the feelings of others. And this can create, or usually creates, a very adverse effect in our execution of spiritual life. So our mind, when it is not fully engaged in devotional service and in glorifying Krishna with our activities, due to his nature of wanting self-glorification, helplessly encaged it is in that desire, can sometimes create problems for others where we do not serve Vaishnavas in an open-hearted way, but in the opposite, we forget it and serve our own interest, even in the name of our projects and service. So, Hare Krishna, therefore we need guidance. We can become and by accepting the guidance of a self-realized soul, we will easily come out of the discomforting nature of our minds. Let's say it like this, and we can then come to a platform beyond the mental assessment of Krishna consciousness, where we are truly free, and where we are truly guided by an inspirated mind. You know, just like we were saying, the mind goes automatically to Maya in conditioned life, goes at this stage automatically to Krishna. That's what we want. That is freedom. If you are as free as you think you are, then tell your mind what you want it to think for the next 5 minutes, and you will see it's not so easy. But if you are purifying that mind, then the mind will carry you to Krishna. Always. So, Hare Krishna, I want to end here. Do you have any questions regarding the subjects which were made? Sorry, I didn't really talk so much on the spiritual master, but it's a verse which we all know. If you want to read it again, it has a very nice verse, 434. So, I mean, the verse you learn in the Bhakta program. I thought the point of guidance is important. Good. Do you have any questions regarding this? Gadadha?
When thoughts are coming in the mind, is this already the sign that there are these desires? So, just cutting them?
No, this is not correct. It's not that. Thoughts come and go even in a self-realized soul. So, you know, only by association thoughts come, for instance. You may just see something like an advertisement. The Austrian advertisements are the most daring advertisement. So just by association the mind will start to think. It's not that you desire this necessarily, but the thought is there. The desire is a state which is much more remote, thinking, feeling and willing. Of course there are desires which you carry with you. They are like seeds, kutastha they are called. They are not yet manifested. You may not be aware of certain desires, in other words, but they will manifest. They are very subtle forms of karma. Desires are also karma. They are. And after some time, it's described just like in a pond, there is foul air on the bottom. So sometimes when you put the stick in the pond or stir a little, or there is another agitation in the pond, that air is released and comes to the surface and smells. In the same way, the thoughts which are embedded from your previous lives and the desires, unfulfilled desires which are there, and also fulfilled desires. I mean, they don't go if you fulfill them, the desires. They are there and they are releasing. Sometimes it's not so pleasant to be confronted with them. But it would be wrong to just feel guilty and look away. You should face them. and then treat them. Shri Krishna says, the doubts which have appeared in your heart due to ignorance should be slayed by the weapon of knowledge. Therefore, arm yourself with yoga, get up and fight. It's not if we see that there are doubts or desires or so on, that we just turn away the other way, pretend they are not there. Look into them. Sometimes, you know, you have to be very strong to look into the face of the doubt, because it might be very unexpected expression there. And then you can actually get the doubt out, the desire out, and then treat it with transcendental knowledge. That it will, it works. We were discussing yesterday, Padmanabha made a point which is very relevant, that knowledge alone does not cure the problem always. You might know, but still you are forced to act by the influence of the lusty desires. So you have to also the knowledge which helps us is realized knowledge in Krishna consciousness. Ultimately, this is called Buddhi Yoga or Krishna consciousness. I'm really tempted to look here, because I've just made a seminar. This was the last 2 days, just boom, 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 and I've made many notes, taken help from Satsvarup Maharaj, wonderful book, Obstacles in Devotional Service. And there he makes one very, very nice point, which I always like so much. There may be doubts, and you may be confronted with material desires, and they don't always go away by just the intellectual approach, you know, knowledge, giving good answers. Some of the doubts and some of the desires go only if you change your pattern of behavior. I mean, this sounds very psychologically. If you do devotional activities, in other words. Like Prabhupada once said, I want to read this to you, to a devotee who had a long doubt list and problem list. May I ask if you are regularly chanting 16 rounds of beads? The tricks of the mind or influence of Maya will infiltrate if we do not follow the regulative principles and regularly chant the prescribed names without any offense. So, there is a transcendental approach to desires and doubts, and that's just to act in the service of Krishna, and you will see they are evaporated after some time. I had such a, if I may note a personal thing to this, I had such a strong realization of this. I'd like to really tell you about it. In my life before I came to Krishna consciousness, I had a very strong desire to go to Afghanistan with a motor bicycle, just drive over the mountains and valleys, and also come in contact with undesirable substances to, you know, just let the mind fly and fly and fly. And once, if you want to know what this means, I'm not going to tell you. And one day, it was in Krishna consciousness, I was in Afghanistan. I was in some desert, and there were only camels around me. You know, we had this bus and we drove to India with it. We wanted to bring the bus for making programs from town to town, village to village in India. And being somewhat adventurous at that time, I was also on that bus. And I was in Afghanistan, and I was sitting amongst the camels, I hadn't noticed how they came around me, and the camels stood around and just looked at me, questioning more or less with their eyes what I was doing there. And I was just thinking, Oh, Krishna has fulfilled this desire. I'm in Afghanistan in an adventurous situation, but I'm not doing sinful activities against the rules and regulations. You would see this more and more. Krishna fulfills desires, but in a way where, you know, this bad effect is not there. You are in an adventurous party also. Anyway, sorry, I've given you such a long answer. Is this answered, or really?
I have one question regarding this point of
confronting
the doubt.
Yeah.
For example, if you know that there are certain parts of the literature, like Srimad Bhagavatam, if you read them, there are some hidden doubts become agitated.
Yeah.
How to deal with this?
Yeah. Gadara asks, if you read in the scriptures and there are certain parts which are so difficult to accept, how to deal with this? There are undoubtedly such parts. You must at that time go to the core of the doubt. For instance, if you doubt, you are a physician student of physics, if you doubt the fifth canto, for instance, the descriptions about that, the planetary systems, you have to see what is behind all this. I mean, it's a challenging mood, more or less. It's not a really submissive mood, because you should be satisfied by saying, well, it's in another dimension. I can't understand this dimension at all, because I'm a three-dimensional human being with three-dimensional thinking, but this is involving so many other dimensions, and you could be satisfied with that. But because you're not, the mind is not willing to accept that there are areas where it cannot go and penetrate, therefore that this doubt is there and it doesn't leave you. Or I had another very good doubt, let me see. Prabhupada said, for instance, in one lecture, this is from Satsvarup Maharaj, a doubt which he is giving us this example. Prabhupada in one of the early lectures described the human being and how, despite its arrangements which go against the nature, has not become happy. Okay? And then he says, Srila Prabhupada said that a human being, despite his many arrangements to become happy in this world, has not succeeded with his technique and so on, which goes against the nature. And then he says, there's no example of a bird dying in nature. You know, making the point that the animals don't have this complicated technological advancement, but they are happy. So the doubt is, what? There is no bird dying in nature all the time. Birds are dying in nature. This is a doubt, right? You follow?
No.
No? I thought I had such a... No, it's not clear.
There's no bird dying in nature.
Prabhupada said, you know, after saying how the materialistic civilization is not successful, Prabhupada said, on the other hand, in the animal society, there is no problem. There is no example of a bird dying in nature. You follow? Prabhupada says like this, and the doubt is there, is this correct? You follow?
Yeah.
Good. That's where he thought, no bird dying in nature. I just need to look out of the window if there's a bird dying. I mean, that's not the nature. I mean, there's all the time birds dying in nature. But here, see, he is just, the mind is just a trickster. This is not the point which Prabhupada wants to make. He said there's a perfect arrangement in nature. That's Prabhupada's point. Nature takes care. And I mean, the birds are dying because also of the arrangement of nature due to karma. But it's not that the birds have this artificial human society which claims to take care of all the things, and you know, it's just like a shiny apple which is rotten in the substance. So the here the doubt is called in English, it's nitpicking. Nitpicking the kleinkrümerischer Geist. It doesn't really follow the line of the argument, but the mind gets stuck with a point which is not so how do you say,
relevant.
And this is often there when we have doubts. When there are doubts, there is an emotion sometimes, an unsubmissive emotion which we have to really address. Is it? Am I losing my audience that has this feeling? This is also when you deal with people. Someone comes in and says, "This was not right." But he might be frustrated in his life due to a complete different nature. This is simply agitated, and you know, now the agitation has to come out. For instance, it may be that a parent just violently punishes his child. It's not really because the child did something wrong, but because he feels so frustrated with his relationship to his wife, for instance. And therefore, he sees a child, "Oh, I got this child from this lady, from this woman who is supposed to be my wife." And he gets, "Wah!" And gets on the case of the poor innocent child. So there are in doubts often there's something behind it which has to be addressed in order to clear the doubt. I'm convinced of this point. I hope I have not made you doubting now. This was not the desire. The point which is here, doubts have to be looked in the face, but they have to be analyzed. It's not always when a doubt is voiced that it's really the doubt which is there. This is a technique, the trick of the mind. You know, like the Red Indians, when the human-eating dogs of the people, the white men, were hunting them, they were smearing a rotten herring, that's a fish, over their traces. And then the dog came and did smell the herring, this fish, this rotten fish, and immediately was thrown from the hunt. It couldn't continue the hunt because it smelled so ugly and was engaged with a fish smell. So this is often how our minds are, you know. We just lose track of the real point because somehow, due to Maya's arrangement, there's this little thing, you know, which doesn't fit into our mind, and then we just lose the point of Krishna consciousness. It's often the case. Okay, Hare Krishna. So we are a little late. We will stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you.